Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. I can't believe it's been a week already. This week has flown by.
It's
Thursday. It's not even Wednesday. It's further into the week.
I know, and there's a big Hearthstone card reveal tomorrow. They're basically doing a stream where they're going to reveal to us the whole rest of the expansion, which is basically almost half the cards. So probably about 50, 60 cards are going to be revealed tomorrow. And so I keep that, like, people keep saying, like, oh yeah, Friday. And I'm like, okay, got a couple of days, no big deal. And I'm like, no, wait, that's literally like less than 24 hours from now. It's because we had Angry Chicken on Wednesday because Garrett was traveling, and now we're doing Gamers In on Thursday. So like my whole week is pushed back by a day. And when you don't have to leave the house, man, it messes with your head.
You need to find excuses to leave the house.
Like, well, no, I know, but like for scheduled like tasks, like a Monday to Friday job, like it really puts you like in a time frame.
Yeah.
Whereas like everything's so loosey-goosey with my schedule that I just never know what day it is.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. And I've had like weeks off where I basically become a shut-in. And in the winter, it's even worse because you just forget what day it is. Or the opposite, when I'm working like a show or a busy week and it's like straight through. It's like, wait a minute, what day is it? Okay, now which Saturday is it? Like, is it a Saturday?
Okay, I've never had that big of a problem where I don't even remember which Saturday it is.
Well, it's what I'm running into now with just all the little things that keep popping up on Saturdays. Like, I'm so good at entering everything in my calendar, even game releases, even sometimes update release, like major update release. Like, oh my gosh, there's a huge update for World of Warcraft this week. It's in the calendar.
I was going to say, so did 7.2 make your calendar?
No, 7.1 didn't even make the calendar. I want to get back into WoW. I was actually thinking about it. Give me, like, the Ryan's probably not going to have time to raid convincing moment to resub for 7.2. I know there's, like, some Broken Shore stuff in there.
Do you remember Timeless Isle in Mists of Pandaria? Did you ever play that content?
I think I did. That was the one where, like, you, me, and Garrett played one night, and that's where we went. We opened, like, treasure chests, and there was, like, a lot of jade everywhere. Okay.
There's, like, an island, and then there was kind of in the middle of it, there was, like, this big area arena. Arena where the Celestial Beasts were battling, and you could go in with your faction and take them down. Yeah. That's the Timeless Isle. So now Broken Shore is kind of similar to that. There's like big bosses that spawn. There's a whole bunch of quests that you can do there, and it's a similar sort of a situation. So there's like, it's basically like a new zone to explore, although it's not that big, but it's big enough. And there's a new dungeon and there's a new raid, so there's lots of content. Plus PvP brawls, which I'm really excited about.
PvP brawls. Okay.
They're the ones where they it's the same sort of idea as like Hearthstone and Overwatch and Heroes of the Storm, where it's like they do something totally different that's outside of all of the normal rules of the game. So like there's one battleground that has no gravity. There's one battleground that's like normally summertime, now it's wintertime, so it's snowing and there's low visibility, so you can't see between the control points anymore. And so it's so they've kind of like made changes to the battlegrounds that way, and I prefer battlegrounds to arenas anyway. So I'm excited about PvP brawls. I think it's going to be really fun. And so there's a new one every week, and that starts I think next week. So they're kind of phasing in the content like 1 week at a time.
Good. This is the basically like the Hearthstone Tavern Brawl, the Heroes of the Storm Brawl.
Yeah.
Brawl, basically.
Yes. The Overwatch brawls where you can, like, it's all May, like that one-shot kills all May, that stuff. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds great. Okay, well then that is, because I've sort of been looking at the games that I've been playing lately. A lot of Fire Emblem Heroes, they just posted an update. I didn't put this in the notes, but you're going to love this. You remember Overwatch when they had their first seasonal event and it's like, oh my god, we get like summer game skins. I need that Tracer skin. I'm going to get as many loose boxes as possible. Fire Emblem Heroes is another one of those gacha games. It's basically like there's a little bit of combat and a little bit of Fire Emblem to it, but then there's a lot of like this gacha loot box type stuff, like use your orbs to get heroes and stuff. They've added a banner, which is a new focus event where you can get special heroes. The special heroes are for the Spring Festival, in which they've taken four of their most popular characters and decked them out in bunny outfits. I'm not joking. One of the characters, and if you look up an image, it's Xander, and he's got a very interesting outfit on. The character is basically changed completely, and he has a carrot for a lance, which is kind of not canon, I would think. Like, how do you fight with a giant carrot?
Oh my god.
Serious question.
Oh, he's pretty.
Yo, you're looking it up? Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just... Someone, I think Drowfear or Leo had posted it in our Discord. And I gotta say, I will be honest, like, I had a bunch of orbs saved, and I dropped a bunch of orbs on it because I was trying to, like, just get a couple of extra heroes. I ended up getting, you know, Carrot Lance and Crom Spring Guy. Even though, and I don't have those characters, that's kind of nice, except they're all decked out in Easter Bunny outfits, which is interesting.
Yeah, they have some really awesome frilly capes, and yeah.
Yeah, it's weird, and you know, like, it's, if you Ooh. Go to... If you,
Camille kind of looks like a slut.
Yeah, well, that brings us to our next point, which is the subreddit for Fire Emblem is having a field day with these new additives, and I gotta say, there's a lot of artistic people in that subreddit that are taking a lot of liberties with the characters, and, you know, saying, ooh, I wonder what this character would look like in a bunny outfit. I wonder what this character would look like in less of a bunny outfit. I wonder what this character would look like for the summer event, in which we would assume Nintendo would lose their mind and put them in probably not an appropriate dress for an all-ages game. Let's say.
Oh, so God.
It's just, it's weird. Like, I enjoy the game for what it is, the combat, the heroes, the little quests and events that they set up. They've been very good at injecting new content into the game. And this is no different. I love this event. It's really cool. I can understand why people get excited when they do these kind of gacha events in games they really love, because it gives you an excuse to drop some of the resources that you've been actually hoarding this whole time. And that's why I kind of love it more than Overwatch's system, because in Overwatch you have to earn those new loot boxes again and again, whereas I can, like, just pool these orbs that they keep giving me and use them whenever I want and buy whichever event stuff I want. So
right, so there aren't special spring orbs.
No.
Like, they're all just orbs. Cool.
Exactly. It's really cool. I can't believe I'm still playing it. I can't believe
you're still playing it either. I keep looking at Gamers in the Discord thinking that there's new messages, and it's all friggin' Fire Emblem stuff. I'm like... How is this still happening?
The four or five people who are posting there, and I'm sure there are more folks that are checking it out, would not blame anybody if you muted that chat room, because you know what? It happens. That's why it's in a different chat room. I had actually thought, you know, the Gamers in Discord was discussing Fire Emblem Heroes so much that it actually blended into the general chat, and I was going to go in there and, like, moderate it and be like, no, we're supposed to talk about this, but they were actually talking about Heroes 2.0, and that's how my brain has been so... So every day I'm playing it, and I'm not surprised that I'm still playing it, because I usually die off things last when it comes to...
mobile stuff?
Anything, like, you know, I wanted to say a fad, but it's not really a fad, it's just a good game, but I'm usually, like, I was the last kid to play Pokemon. Like, I was buying, like, silver and gold, and other people were like, what's Pokemon? I'm playing Yu-Gi-Oh. It's like, God, I can't keep up with you people. No, it's a lively community, and I totally understand if people aren't playing it still, because it is one of those free-to-play mobile games, and that's not people's jam sometimes. So, but yeah, a lot of folks are still playing it. So,
if you want to check out that conversation, you can go to bit.ly/TGI Discord, all lowercase. I know Ryan would love to have more Fire Emblem talkers in that channel. I try every once in a while to pop in there and see what's going on, and it's way over my head. So
bunnies.
You guys are on your own. Yeah, apparently bunnies is what's happening.
At least for the next 2 weeks, bunnies.
Yeah. Speaking of bunnies and animals in general, you've been playing a lot of Horizon now, right? So I am so glad you are on the Horizon train. Success!
Toot toot, right? I don't know why I said that. Probably a children's book I've been reading. It's a lot. Man. Caden's in the phase where he is just bringing like the same book over and over again, and he has this tooting book, so that's what I read. Anyways, Horizon. Horizon Zero Dawn.
Horizon, yeah.
We're not talking about Fire Emblem anymore. You've had your chance. You've been talking about it on the show for the last few weeks, and I know the way your brain works with the show. Like, you want to talk about Horizon every week, and that's awesome, but sometimes you're like, no, I can't talk about it. I gotta talk about something different, because this is how the show stays fresh. I talk about something different. And I disagree. I think it's awesome when we talk about something for a very long time, because that's fun. But Horizon, finally, it's like, okay, Zelda, I think I've gotten to the point where, with Zelda, where I'm not itching to play it all the time. I think I've done enough in it that I can set it aside for a little bit. So I picked up Horizon, and this was the day after Mass Effect launched. So I'm like, you know, I just want to play something that I can easily, like, hit rest mode, turn the TV off, because I had a bunch of other stuff going on. So I was playing it, and I'm starting to really enjoy it a lot more, getting into the gameplay feedback of, you know, going in, shooting, setting up traps. When I was just jumping in for small snippets, I found I was dying a lot, and that was frustrating. But once you kind of figure out the combat, because it's harder in that game to get away without expending all of your sort of resources that you've collected, you know? And I find that when you know what you're doing and you kind of crouch down, you get all stealth mode and you plan your attack, as opposed to going in guns blazing, it's easier to take the thing down and get out of there with some of your resources intact. So,
well, and I think too, the further along you get in the game, the more resources you get, because you get a whole bunch of different weapons. So, you know, having more tools available to you makes the combat more enjoyable, but they do introduce it to you. It's funny because you get a very, very slow increase in weapons, and then all of a sudden, like, you find your first big city merchant and it's like, here's everything.
Okay. That's the thing too. So I have these weapons and I'm coming across these hunter trials, which are like basically test your combat skills, and I'm getting just rolled over by them. And to me that, and the levels clearly show that I am at the appropriate level, but I don't think I'm at the appropriate sort of skill or even have the equipment that they're looking for. And you quickly learn that you need a specific bow to use a specific type of ammo, which makes perfect sense in the grounded world that you live in. But having played Zelda, where it's like every bow fits every use, like the bows, there's two types of bows in The Legend of Zelda. There's the one that shoots one arrow, and there's the ones that shoot three arrows.
Yeah.
And then there's the ones that shoot two arrows. It can shoot everything. It is a multi-pass type bow. It can do everything. But with Horizon, you need a specific bow to shoot specific ammo, and sometimes that specific ammo is required to really damage specific animals and or robots. And in this game, I think I got stuck where it booted me in and there was two saber-tooth things blocking a story path, and I'm like, well, how the hell am I gonna do this? And it turns out I wasn't able to do it. I just kept dying, and I think eventually the game booted me in and was like, hey, maybe we'll only put one here. Let's see how you do.
Was it a hunter trial that you were stuck on? Because basically what I did is I discovered all the hunter camps, and I talked to them about what the trials were, and then I was like, okay, I'm going to need to wait until, like, basically I didn't do the hunter trials until I was at the very end of the game. I just said, like, okay, hunter trials is not going to be for me, and I waited until, like, right up when I thought I'd hit the end of the story and the point of no return. And I was like, okay, now I'm going to go back and do everything. So I was high enough level and I had all the weapons and all the possible ammo combinations. So it was a lot easier, but I kind of went around and was like, yeah, they are very specific. There's one hunting ground that's like all elemental. So you have to have like the best frost, the best shock, and the best fire weapons to complete the trials. And it's they are trials for sure.
Yeah, that's refreshing, honestly. I think that it's frustrating in the moment when it's like, I've come across this quest, why can't I do it? And this is where I was mistaken about this game, where it felt very linear at the time, but it is a big world with stuff that you have to come back to. Like, you may have trained your whole life, but you were training your whole life for the proving, as opposed to training your whole life for what's out there. Like, what's out there is vast and difficult and different. So I've put those aside. I don't think the story is quite picked up for me yet. I haven't made it to the first big city, which I know is probably where it will start to pick up again. But I've sort of been, you know, dancing around and finding vantage points and getting some of the backstory, which is awesome. I love it when a game is clearly set on our planet, but doesn't address some of the things that may have happened. From where we are now in 2017 to where the game is placed. Like, Mass Effect did a really good job of doing that, the original trilogy, in stating what happened between 2015, 2014 to wherever this game is set, because it's clearly set in this universe. And a game that, like, games like that are really good. Like, a game that did that very poorly was Destiny. You know, like, Destiny was a game that was kind of like, I don't know, Earth's fucked, and there's a big orb, and it kind of protects us for some reason, and, you know, shit happened, but we're not going to tell you about it. You're not
just
even...
trust us. Yeah. It's a great story, we promise.
You're not even a real person. You're like a beam of light, you know? You got a robot who is British and is now Nolan North. I don't know. But anyways, yeah, I love...
Ryan does Destiny in 15 seconds or less.
Hey, you know what? I kid... I don't kid. I was being serious there, but I love Destiny. I'm looking forward to Destiny 2, but I'm just hoping that they put a little story into it, because Bungie's known for great story, or at least a good story. And anyways, Horizon, I wanted to bring it up because I know that you 100%ed it. I wanted to know, like, what drove you to such madness?
Well, I think I was having such a good time in the world, because I think, and I don't know exactly where you are in the story, and I don't want to say too much, but there was kind of like one point in the story where I got to a certain spot and then a character was revealed and I went, whoa, that guy, I friggin' love that guy. And I was super excited. And then from then on, the story, like, it branches in a whole bunch of different ways, and I find each different branch of the story was very compelling. So, I mean, what part of the story are you working on right now? Because you've done the proving, you're kind of at the hunting ground, so I feel like you're maybe, like, halfway through, like, the Nora area?
I'd say, yeah, about halfway. I just cleared... I do remember exactly where I am. I just cleared the gate to the next people's city. So they told me to go to the gate, and they said, well, they're not going to let you in because they're trying to hold the corruption back. It's like, girl, I just defeated the corruption, and now I'm through that gate, and I just saved.
Is that the city that's kind of like a little bit up on a mountain almost, and then there's like a valley on the other side, and there was like something outside the gate that you had to defeat?
I haven't gone through. Okay. I've just gone through the gate. It's looking a little medieval, like kind of like castle-y.
Yeah, so you're basically getting your first introduction to the Karja civilization.
Sure.
Did you do the Nora side quest?
Which was the war chief lady?
Going after the war chief. Yeah.
I did that. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So the War Chief story was kind of the first time where I realized, because it tells you basically to go and follow the people who, I'm trying to remember exactly what the motivation was, but basically it was like the one branch of the story, which is the main story, is going to the Karja city at the gate to kind of go to Meridian. And then there is the other branch of the story, which was follow the War Chief. And the follow the War Chief thing, I thought was the main story. That was the side quest that I was like, how are you even a side quest? Like, this feels like the way the story should go. This feels like what my character would do was, you know, like, help her tribe and, you know, all the rest of it. So that was the point in the story where I kind of went like, whoa, this game is like seriously good, because I didn't even realize I was on a side quest. And then I went back to the main quest, and then kind of there are, I think, three more kind of side quests throughout the game. And I found all of those stories really compelling. But then also at the same time, the main story is amazing. So I was just like, oh my God, there's so many different branches that I can take. And it wasn't like the typical Mass Effect problem. And not that, I think they addressed it really well in Andromeda, and we'll get there in a minute. But I feel like I've talked about it before, like the universe is ending. You know what the big bad is. Like, oh my God, go, go, go. This didn't feel like that. It felt like a gradual progression. So I had a little bit more of a chance to explore and kind of give everything the weight it deserved. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what drove me. And then I just kind of realized that I was getting closer and closer. I was like 60% done through the achievements or something. And I was like, I love this game. Like, the combat is super fun. Like, let me just go and look and see what the different, like, achievements are. And, like, when I was looking, it was like, you know, find all the vantage points, find all the metal flowers, like, collect all the, which they actually, because I know I mentioned this before, but they actually tie the metal flowers together. I was pleasantly surprised.
It's not just it's not just a pile of poop at the end when you collect all 900?
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, it was, basically, I realized how close I was to a lot of the achievements, and I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to go and finish it. Although I did finish the game before I went back and did my final achievement. My final achievement was going back to the Nora place, and it's not a hidden one, so it's not really a spoiler, but I went back to the Nora area, and you have to knock over all the target dummies in all the cities. So I had to go back to all the Nora cities and just walk up to the target dummies and go, what? And by that time, you're so powerful that you literally, like, blow on them and they fall over, but...
So I should be hitting all... Like, I felt bad. I knocked over one of the target dummies and they were actually using it. And then they all, like, they stopped and they walked away all sad. And I was like, I'm sorry, I needed the achievement. Like, So my question about the game is, I love, like, this... we've touched on this before, but the layering, the slow layering of the story and the mystery and without answering questions. However, is there payoff? Like, does it pay off?
Oh God, yeah.
Okay, it basically, good.
Like, by the end of the game, you know what happened.
Oh, good. That's good. And that's all I need to
but
know
it's,
because
it's filled in gradually, and there's different ways to kind of find the information, and it also fills in depending on how many of the different information points you scan and all that kind of stuff. It fills out a lot of the stuff about, like, the Nora tribe and the Karja and all the people that you're going to meet. Like, it does really flesh it out a lot, and there are quite a few, like, audio diaries that you pick up. You pick up a lot when you're a kid, and that picks up again later on. But you get a lot of kind of like visions of the past through either emails or that were sent or through audio diaries that were recorded on people's focuses. So you start to really fill in all those gaps.
Yeah, the future they paint, or I guess the past in this, our future, their past, they paint in this game is interesting because it feels, from what I've experienced, it feels like something that could happen eventually. Like, there's
dude, there's so much of that where you're seeing like ads for different companies or stuff that's like news reports and military reports and all these kind of things. And as you're like reading the progression, you're just like, I can really, really see this playing out. Like, this is not a far-fetched sci-fi story. And that's kind of what was the most, I guess, impactful and, like, kind of terrifying. And I'm just like, oh, my God. Like, I can see exactly how this future played out.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It's,
like, weird in a very well-written, realistic way.
Yeah, and I was reading
as
stories.
Realistic as primal people fighting dinosaur robots can possibly be.
I made the mistake of explaining this game at the lunch table filled with government employees just sitting there eating their lunch, minding their own business. And I have a couple of gaming friends in the room, and one of them loves to collect things. And I was saying, oh, you would love this game because there's lots of things to collect. It's an open world. The combat's really fun. The story's really great. And they're like, oh, yeah, which game is it? It's like, oh, it's Horizon Zero Dawn. It's based in the future. It's actually the post-apocalyptic world. There are dinosaur robots, and you're a redhead with an archery bow, and you can, like, shoot robots, and you're a hunter, and it's really cool. And, like, majority of the table looked like at me like I was crazy. Even the gamer people were like, post-apocalypse? What are you saying? That's not a word, Ryan. It's like, well, AP Style just added it to their dictionary, so that's not true.
They didn't do that.
They should. If they're adding, I don't know what else they added. That seems to be the joke of the internet this week. But I'm really enjoying it. And honestly, the argument could be made that between this and another sci-fi game that may have or may not have come out recently, this might be a better choice. I don't know. Horizon's really fun.
Just Horizon there. Is really fun. I think the combat being so puzzly and the story in the end, like, once I finished everything, I was kind of like, I still didn't want to walk away from the universe. I was like, I finished like right around the same day that they announced that there was DLC coming, and that mm-hmm. was really exciting. But I'm just kind of like, I see where, because spoiler-ish, there's a post-credits scene. Yeah. So, like, stick around all the way to the end of the post-credits, or I guess stick around all the way to the end of the credits mm-hmm. for the post-credits scene. And it's kind of... kind of cliffhanger-ish, but at the same time, that could have also just been the end of the story. So, you know, like, there, it leaves it open, potentially, but it's not like, duh-duh-duh.
Yeah, I don't think people should be surprised in this world of Marvel movies and having to Google, is there a post-credit scene at the end of every movie, that games, which, you know, if it's successful, you can pretty much believe that they're going to make a sequel without needing a post-credit scene. I think the post-credit scene is just there to be like, yes, we know you're interested in the world. Here's a little bit more. This is basically going to take us in the sequel. I know a lot of folks have said, like, oh, man, the ending was perfect. Then they added the post-credits and, like, okay, yeah, we get it. You're a major, you know, video game company owned by a console manufacturer. You're going to make a sequel. It's not rocket science.
I kind of hope that they don't at the same time, because I feel like experiences like Horizon Zero Dawn and for me, Quantum Break last year, they are so good in and of themselves. As much as I love the universe, like, there are parts of the world that are kind of mentioned that I would like to see them explore, but I feel like they could just add another zone with a DLC, because there's a lot of tribalism and there's a lot of, like, just different cultures and different areas and stuff, and I think that that would be really interesting to explore without needing another big overarching story, you know? Because the big overarching story of Horizon Zero Dawn is finished. It's like, it's kind of like wrapped up, basically. And if they did do a Horizon Zero Dawn 2 with what they showed in the post-credit scenes, it would seem very much like rehashed of what Horizon Zero Dawn was, and I wouldn't want that. So if it was just a standalone experience, I think I'd be happy. But I would like to see them do a little bit more, because the combat was so fun. So I would like to see DLC for it, but I don't want to see, like, Horizon First Dawn or something.
It sounds like you're going to get both, because I think...
Yeah, I know. And it was also wildly successful, and I understand studios like to make money, and I just hope that they are as creative with their second story as they have been with their first, because it really was phenomenal. And I'm looking forward to when you actually finish it, so that I could be like, oh my god, dude, did you, like, this thing and this thing? Because I feel like no one else is, like, except for, I think, probably Josh, who is a longtime listener of the show. I think Josh might be the only person I can actually talk to, because we both, like, 100%ed the game.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things happening, including Bojarge in the chat room saying that we're talking like politicians reviewing a video game, being all non-spoilery.
I'm just trying not to spoil it for Ryan, because yes, I could go off for hours about this game.
And maybe there's an opportunity to pull someone in who has finished it. I wish I could have finished it. The original plan, you know, a little sausage factory here, but it's terrible. Why would I say that? Like,
I don't know.
Like, making the sausage, like, what is it? Yeah, like,
I knew anyways, what you meant, but
it's... We were going to do a spoiler cast, and then basically, like, I effed up and didn't finish the game in time, but hey, maybe next week we can pull someone in who's finished it. It's up to you. But,
and we can have a Horizon spoiler talk. I think I would really like that.
And then I could bookmark it and listen to it in the near future. I've been playing it. I'm enjoying it. And I think if I were able to get through the story beats, I wouldn't be opposed to two people who are really, really, really into it doing a spoiler cast. That would be awesome. I will finish it eventually. That's definitely my goal.
You have to. I'm telling you.
I know.
Crack the whip until you do it. I will not let you pick up anything else past Mass Effect Andromeda before you finish Hero Dawn.
Well, I don't think there's really anything else. Like, this is it, right? This is all the games for 2017. We have three major open world games to play, plus a Hearthstone expansion and Heroes 2.0, and we're all set, right? That's how the video game industry works, right?
Yep. We're never seeing anything else until we finish these titles.
Perfect. No, I do want to finish Horizon, and I'm thinking that, I mean, we're going to get into it in a bit, but with the way Mass Effect Andromeda is working out for me, it is nice to have breaks in between that. And I think Horizon and Mass Effect would be easier to jump in between than Horizon and Zelda.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because I find with Mass Effect, it's I guess a very easy game for me to put down.
Mm-hmm.
Which it's so funny because I didn't have that feeling with Mass Effect 3. Mass Effect 3, I was like waking up, playing 16 hours, going to sleep, waking up, playing another 16 hours. Like, I could not put that game down. But it was also the end of a trilogy and a story and characters I was very invested in. In Mass Effect Andromeda, and we might as well just go right into our chat about it today, but in Mass Effect Andromeda, I'm finding that I'm not getting sucked in to the characters the way I got sucked into Shepard. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with Ryder or any of the other characters that I've found so far, but I'm having trouble kind of with that emotional connection that they seem to want to build between me and the characters. Like, I guess kind of a spoiler-ish event that happens in your kind of tutorial trailer type planet, which I am now through. So if you don't want to hear it, then maybe skip ahead a minute. But basically, your father sacrifices himself for you. And I was just kind of like, yeah, okay.
Sure.
Like, it's like it happened so early that I hadn't made a connection to either one of the characters. And I was kind of like, okay, well, I kind of knew this was going to happen eventually because I need to become Pathfinder. And if you are Pathfinder, I can't be Pathfinder. So if A, then B, something bad has to happen to the Pathfinder.
Exactly.
And so, I mean, like, it's spoilers, but not that spoilerish. And so, yeah, I don't have the connection to the game yet. For that moment to really have a big impact on me. Maybe I'm just a terrible person. That's also possible.
You're not a terrible person. The thing is, at the beginning when your father dies, your character is sad for like a split second. And throughout
the other thing too, my character didn't even seem to give a shit.
Exactly. And throughout the game, I have not beaten it yet. So I'd say I'm on the third planet, but that even doesn't begin to measure the progress in this game because there's a lot of different factors, but I've accessed the third planet and that's given, you know, a lot more story. And you get the sense that, They lay it on pretty quickly at the beginning. Like, your father's dead. You notice it for a sec. Your twin is in a coma. and you barely care. And the game doesn't make you care. The game doesn't even try to make you care. It's like, hey, we found a way to communicate with your brother if you want to come on down. And it's like, yeah, it's a side quest. It's not even a main priority. It's not a main priority for my character to walk down the way to visit my comatose brother. It's almost like, I don't know, I got better things to do, like to pathfind.
And I mean, I understand that, like, finding a colony, finding the missing ships, like, basically, so this is the point of the story that I'm at, is I've gotten to a place where everyone has kind of gathered, and it's basically like, shit's hit the fan, nothing's working out the way we thought it was going to, and, you know, like, so here are the things that we need to do as kind of like crisis management. Mm-hmm. You need to A, B, C, D. And so it doesn't make any of those things feel more important than any of the other things going on. So this is what I say, I think Andromeda has done a better job of not tunnel visioning me, but at the same time, like I said, I don't have a lot of connection to anything going on right now. So it's interesting. And Bogard in the chat room is saying that the game basically allows you to say that the father was distant. And I think that's the feedback I got from other characters. Cause I said something, I can't remember what the response, I picked the opposite response to that though. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't believe he's gone or something like that. And then the NPC says back to me, yeah, but he was really distant. And yeah. I was just kind of like, oh, okay.
I did the same thing. And as you progress in the game, there's a mechanic to do your favorite thing, which is unlock memories. So you unlock memories, and that gives you a bit of insight into your father as a character. It doesn't justify your character basically not mourning the death of his own father and possibly the you know.
Oh, are you playing as male Rider?
No, I'm playing as female Rider. Oh, okay. I figured this time around, it's like, I want to, it seems like this is the wrong time to switch sides from, you know, in the main game, I was male Shep.
Yeah, but it kind of makes sense, right? Because you're not Shepard anymore.
No, but I mean more from a standpoint of people have been really upset with Sarah Ryder and the way that she's animated. And I'm not necessarily upset, but we addressed it on the show last week when I said that no matter what is happening in the game, she's always got this like half grin on her face. And
oh, dude. when you wake up after the first planet,
yeah.
Like her facial animations were awful. She was like, first of all, she like opened her eyes and then they were like kind of all glitchy, but she still had this like weird smile on her face. And then she like sits up and she's like, "Where's my dad?" And I'm like, "Whoa, dude, yeah. What is wrong with you?"
It's and this is the thing. I can forgive minor defects in animations on such a large game. I can forgive immense defects on side characters and, you know, non-necessary NPCs. But when a main character from in a main moment at the start of the game has such a rough animation after like what is supposed to be an emotional moment, yeah. Has something like that happen to their face, it's just
did man. Anyone QA this at all?
I don't know. Like, there's articles out there both, you know, doing, you know, it's like one and zero on the internet. They're either, yeah. You know, tearing it apart, which I understand why you think that's a good idea, but it really isn't. And then the other one is like trying to justify it. And I don't think that's the right way either. There's got to be a middle ground where you say, look, this is unacceptable. However, we understand it's a large game. So we're definitely not going to forgive these key moments, but we can forgive the little things that pop up. You know, yeah. And in the original Mass Effect trilogy, you did it all the time, but mm-hmm. there were moments where the animations and the cutscenes worked really well because there were moments that needed to work well.
I don't remember this being an issue in like major cutscenes where you're like, I remember animations being really stiff in Mass Effect 3. And most of that was in when you had the dialogue wheel, right? And then so it's like sometimes you're there a little bit disjointed and stuff because you maybe choose the dialogue in the order that it wasn't meant to be, or, you know, that it wasn't animated, or their, you know, faces are, because there was a lot of emotion too. So sometimes the faces would jump from happy to sad really quick. And it was a little jarring. But in any of like the big, like, not necessarily emotional cutscenes, but any of the big moments, the big cutscenes, they were generally, like, it felt like I went from looking at the game to looking at something that was, like, an animation. And there was that kind of step up in quality for those moments. And it seems like in Mass Effect Andromeda, it's a step down in quality, which, you're right. Like, if they're reviewing anything and polishing anything, you would think it would be the cutscenes that would get the best treatment. But it really didn't seem that way. So it was, like I said, and we talked about it last week, so I don't want to go into too much. But yeah, it's, I'm not noticing it as much in kind of conversations anymore, but I'm also like purposely looking away.
Yeah. I'm more listening than I am, actively focusing on like when it's a cutscene, I'm paying attention, but when it's just a conversation, I'll like look to the side and check Reddit as I'm listening to the conversation, because most of the time those dialogue points, while interesting, is explanation. Like they VO everything. And before we move away from the issues of the game, they did announce that they're going to be doing they announced there's going to be an announcement on April 4th, which is next Tuesday. Whether that announcement is paired alongside a patch, they have said that they're going to be addressing a lot of the issues. And they specifically said they've collected feedback, which is positive and both critical. So they're aware of the issues. I mean, BioWare is not, you know, they've had this before with their games, like, and they take feedback seriously, to the point that they created a free update for Mass Effect 3 to address the ending issue. Like, I don't think there's been another company that has ever done that.
Yeah, that's just totally revamped the ending of their game because people complained.
Exactly, especially one owned by EA, which people seem to think is the devil for some reason.
Agreed.
You know, large corporation, they must be the devil, right? There are worse companies out there, folks. You know, ones that don't make, you know, one of your favorite hobbies. So just give them a chance, and I know I'm giving them a chance, because I'm going to play this game, I'm going to finish it. It's got issues, ones that I'm sure that they can polish out in patches, add to in DLC, and possibly just straight up address in a sequel, because there's going to be a second one. It's a new trilogy, supposedly. And I mean, I haven't finished it or anything, and the story is starting to pick up, but
I feel like this one was a little bit slower to start. And that totally makes sense, because it's kind of like a pioneer story, right? It's not an invasion story. So, or I guess it technically we are the invaders in this game. So, and yeah. I'm sure that that's going to pick up along the way, but, I forgot how many dialogues and interactions, and it's like every person I go to talk to, there's like 7 or 8 recorded voice lines that I have to hear, and that took me a long time. I played for quite a few hours today, and I still haven't made it to my first planet, just because like I found a few quests and I had to go talk to everybody all over the kind of central area once you first get there, and I was just like, man, oh man, this is taking a long time to actually. And I know I could skip all that, but then you're skipping the stories, and then why are you playing? Because the combat is kind of hit and miss. So the story is always so central to BioWare games and to Mass Effect in general that I just feel like I can't skip through any of this. As much as I want to just get going and kind of establish my first colony, I can't, right? Because that's such a big part of the game. I am enjoying it. I'm enjoying a return to a lot of the characters and races, I guess not characters, but at least races that we're used to seeing from Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3. And I'm a little bit, I mean, it's I guess good and bad. They've got some serious voice actors, or I guess just actors in general, playing parts in this one that almost takes me out of it, because I recognize their voices so much. Like there's the dude from Silicon Valley is the main Solarian guy.
Yeah.
And there's the Asari who's on your ship, and I can't place her voice, but I know once I place it, I'm going to be like, I feel like she's like somebody's mom who's a doctor on a show that I watch all the time.
I know what you're talking about, the doctor Lexi on the ship.
Yeah, the very first character that you meet.
She's Marjorie on Game of Thrones. Marjorie? Is that right?
Is she really?
Tyrell or Tyrell? I'm not as big as Game of Thrones person. Yeah, she is.
Okay, so no, that's probably not the one that we're probably not thinking about the same person then.
Are you thinking it? Well, you haven't landed on the first planet, right?
No.
So there's the doctor.
There's one character who I know her voice, and I think she played like a doctor in another thing, but a mom. And I feel like it might even be like a Grey's Anatomy character or something, but like I know her from like mainstream television. And then you're right. Yeah, I know the character that you're talking about, I think, that is played by, I'm totally blanking on her name, but the point is there are a lot of recognizable voices in this, and it's taking me right out of it.
Really?
In some cases, because I'm just like, I have that like association with them already. So then seeing their voices come out of a, like, I feel like even if they were a human character, I might have less of a like disjointed thing, but I almost want my alien races to be voiced by people I don't recognize.
Yeah, I can kind of see that with the guy from Silicon Valley. I can't remember. I'm terrible with actor names, so I'm not even gonna try. But that guy, he also. But I was weaned into it because he played a character in he was a character in the Walking Dead Telltale game. Now I can't remember which one it was. I think it was season 2, and yeah, and you know, spoiler alert, he's around for an episode. But he and that kind of prepared me. He was playing a human in that, though, obviously, but you know, for a little bit. Anyways, in this, I think he's a perfect Solarian once you kind of get the hang of it. At first it is a little jarring. Because I was kind of in the trailers when they were introducing VO actors, it's like, I don't know, like I'm not really seeing it, but then you get used to it, because obviously this is a character that you're going to talk to throughout the game, and it's nice that you have a seasoned actor playing that character.
That is true. Like I say, it's not that they are doing a bad job. They are doing a very good job delivering all of their voice lines and stuff. But no, the it's just that I know them and I know their faces and their faces are in my head. So then when I hear their voice, I'm just kind of like, meh. Like, I wish I didn't recognize you, because that was the big thing. Even the character, I guess the reporter in Mass Effect 3, who like everybody knew, I didn't know her ahead of time, so I can't remember who played her, but she was, I feel like she was like a famous YouTuber or something like that.
Oh, yes. Chobot.
Yes, yeah. So I feel, but I wasn't really familiar with her. So even though everyone else knew her, I didn't. So all of the characters and all of their voices were just, they were brand new to me. And so I feel like recognizing the voices is throwing it off. But they're doing a great job. Like, I understand choosing actors because they're doing a great job delivering their lines. But yeah. And okay, good. Chat room is agreeing with
They're agreeing with you, yeah.
Yeah.
But I only watched one season of Silicon Valley.
The thing is, his delivery is just so spot on with his character in Silicon Valley that there isn't that separation. Like, he didn't try to change his voice or his cadence or his delivery at all. So it's very much like, as you're listening to him, you can just totally picture him sitting at the table at the startup in Silicon Valley. Like, it just, it's, yeah. So I think that maybe it's specifically my problem with him, because like I said, the other characters' voices I recognize, I'm straining to put their actual face to it. So there is a little bit of separation there. But yeah, with him specifically, I was like, oh man, like, I know exactly who that is.
Yeah. This game was cursed from the beginning because it's, and this is just isn't for VO, it's for everything. This game was cursed because it comes after a fantastic trilogy. Yeah. 5 years later, where we've had enough time to forgive the issues of the Mass Effect trilogy and kind of raise it above as this classic gaming adventure. But you know, not long enough that you can't remember what actually was really great about that franchise. And they've brought it back, and a lot of people are critiquing it for basically like, what made Mass Effect great? Check those boxes, put them in. And I totally understand a lot of the criticisms people are laying on the feet of Mass Effect Andromeda, but you know, we come it's in an age where like every game isn't going to be perfect. This is by far not a perfect game. It's a good game. It's not great, but it's a good game. And there's moments in there, in this game, that I really love, that I loved about the trilogy, which is, you know, the combat is still really fun. The multiplayer is really good.
Is really good.
Yeah,
that is true. We played a bit of it last Thursday on stream, and it's the same sort of multiplayer that we're used to with the waves of different enemies. But man, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and I mean, let's jump over to that in a bit. But the other thing that I wanted to touch on was that it's got the conversations, the sci-fi. Like, I can't remember the last time I played a game in this type of world. Like, I know Horizon Zero Dawn has some sci-fi moments to it, but Mass Effect Andromeda has, it's straight up, you're in space. You are in a weird place. Could they have done some more things? Like, there's a couple glaring issues. I don't want to get into one of them because you're not that far. We'll be able to talk about it in a couple weeks. But, you know, one of them is the fact that they talk about this huge initiative to bring everybody to Andromeda, but they don't have the other races. Like, they got the key tenant races, you know, the Asari, the Salarians, and the Turians, and the humans, but there's no, you know, Hanar and Elcor and weird dog short people. I can't remember. Vogels or something. You know, they don't have those, but there's like a throwaway line where it's like, oh yeah, they're late. They're all on a ship, but they're late.
Yeah, I think it's like they get hung up because they have so many different species on their ship that they had many different kinds of biological needs or something. And then so something went wrong trying to make all those systems work together. So then they ended up like basically being delayed past when the other ships launched. So they're not expected for a couple of years still, which basically is like, they'll be in your first DLC.
and you know, like, the people who have problems with this games and want to, you know, focus on those problems, add that to their bullet list. And for me, it's like, hey, kudos, you just explained away why they're not there, and it totally makes sense. And who's gonna wait around for Elcor and Hanar and Vogels? Like, they can get here when they get here. Volus, thank you.
Thank you, chat room.
We can wait around for them. It's not a big deal, you know. And if it's DLC, great. You buy it. If you don't like the game, then you don't buy it. That's on BioWare, right? But, you know, it's just, it's a lot of fun. And it's in space. And you're shooting things. And you're hitting on everybody. And you're just having great conversation. And it makes sense now.
You're hitting on everybody.
It's true. And you know what? They actually explain it really well. It's like, you end up talking to one person. And he flat out asks you, like, hey, are you planning on making babies? And I'm like, wow, that's a pointed question. And they get into the whole repopulation idea.
I was going to say, yeah, you are a colonist, and most of your ARC ships are missing, so it makes sense. Like,
exactly. And, you know, it's just, if you focus on the negative and you listen to a lot of video game podcasts, you're going to hear a lot of that. But I hear this is a safe place. We can talk about the positive notions without being, you know, rose-colored glasses. Like, don't go in thinking this is a perfect game, but... it's going to check those boxes, I think.
I think Mass Effect is suffering from the exact same problems that I had with Zelda, mm-hmm. in that it is a brand or an entry into a franchise. And so you're going to fall into the rose-colored glasses looking back at all the stuff from years ago. You're going to, you know, fall into the trap of, well, last game this happened, and this mm-hmm. game it's different. So some of these things I like, but some of these things I don't. Versus a game like Quantum Break or Horizon Zero Dawn, which are the first entry into their franchises and potentially the only entry into their franchises, those you're much more able to say, like, oh my God, this is brand new. This is exciting. This is cool. I like this. I don't really like this. But, you know, like, the trade-off is they have so many of these great things, whether it's combat or story or whatever. Hmm. It's all things that are new and you've never seen before. So you don't have a preconceived notion of what the game should be. Whereas when you're looking at Zelda, when you're looking at Mass Effect, you're kind of like, oh, okay, here's all the things that I loved from the previous entries. I really hope that they're in there. And then your anticipation goes up and up and up. And then, you know, you see what the game is. And no matter what, it's never going to live up to everyone's expectations, because it's just, it's impossible, right? Because everyone loves different parts of gaming. So when you have that, like, existing expectation and existing experience in a franchise, then it's so much easier to just say, like, this game doesn't level up, or I'm going to be super hard on the facial animations, even though I've totally forgotten that 5 years ago they were crap too. Mm-hmm. It's like that goes right out the window. So I think that might be the problem with Mass Effect, and it's really hard to just separate yourself from all that's come before and just evaluate it as a standalone game. So, I mean, so far though, I'm having fun. I'd forgotten how much talking there was to do, but I'm at the point now where I'm kind of like getting a little bit more invested, and I was looking forward to getting on to my first world, and I would have tonight if we hadn't had to stop to record. So I feel like once I get into it a little bit more, I am interested in, like, the ancient technology stuff. I think that could be really cool. It's close to the Prothean storyline, which, again, could be good or bad. I don't necessarily want just a rehashed version, but I think it could be interesting, because they did. I just had another throwaway kind of line where she was like, yeah, the ancient technology that we had back in the Milky Way, you know, was very much like press and go. This stuff is much more complicated and, you know, like, works in a different way and has, you know, different interfaces and stuff like that. So seems like it could be different enough that I'll still find it new and interesting.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of things to love in this game, and from if you don't try and nitpick, it does feel good. And honestly, a lot of some concerns I've seen is, like, characters, not liking some of the characters. Like, yeah, you're not gonna love them all.
No.
Because you're thinking, oh man, there's a Turian on my team, but I really miss Garrus, and this character isn't Garrus, and so mm-hmm. on and so forth. And yeah, some of the characters are pretty boring and you don't want to pay attention to them. But the beauty of it is that there's a lot of them, and they introduce them to you, like, right away. And you have a full team. You get the achievement for it, like, within, you're like probably an hour away from that. You know, and that's not a spoiler, because it just happens. And it's like, hey, you got your team. Perfect. Or probably more than an hour. You've got some time. But and then you're going to pick your favorite two or three, like I did with every Mass Effect game. And guess what? Freddie Prinze Jr. from Mass Effect 3, he got talked to once or twice. You know, I didn't take him on missions because I didn't really like the character, but some people adored them. And, you know, PP or whatever her name is, she's awesome. I love that type of, like, chaotic, neutral, like, weird, messed up head type character. It just keeps things interesting. And yeah, I don't know. You're gonna latch on to a couple of your favorites, and and don't be worried that you're not gonna hate them all. Is all I'm saying.
I think it would be, because all of the characters do seem very different, I think it would be impossible to hate them all. Yeah. Like, it would be really, really difficult. But yeah, so I'm looking forward to getting more into Mass Effect. I'm looking forward to playing more multiplayer, because the other thing that I kind of stumbled upon in the first, like, base is the, like, that mission table you were talking about, and your ability to send out squads to do stuff or to choose to do it in multiplayer. I think that that is a much better way to integrate stuff together. Although I did notice that, like, I think all of the potential multiplayer missions were gold. And I was like, nope.
Yeah. It's, I'm right now with my strike teams, I've basically got two of them going. They're about level 20 and they can do silvers no problem, but the golds, they still have like a 2%. So I think the golds are reserved for folks that have like maxed out characters, and the silver and bronzes you can kind of do, which kind of makes sense. Cause once you get farther into the game and you've played it for a couple months and you have your high level characters, you can just, you know, do your strike teams, do the lower missions that you're not touching, and then do your own gold missions. And I think, I can't say this for sure, but I'm pretty sure that if you do the, they have like the Apex logo over top of them, like an orange chevron or something. And if you do those in game, you get more rewards for both yourself and your multiplayer character, but you don't get them for your strike team. But you, if you do them in the app, you do get more rewards for your strike team and none for your multiplayer characters. So I think there is a benefit to going in and doing the Apex ones with yourself and doing just the other normal ones as your strike
teams. Those are the ones I'm talking about. The ones with the little chevron, orange chevron thing that say, like, they have the option. I think I have three or four of them. They have the option for you to actually go in and play them in multiplayer. Those are the ones that I've said, the only ones I have options for are gold. And I'm like, I know, like, we were doing bronze and barely getting extracted. Like, there's no way. Like, multiplayer this time around feels a lot harder. So I know that there's no way that I'm going to be able to jump in and do those on gold. So I was kind of wondering, like, in terms of, like, difficulty, it's almost like a barrier between me and multiplayer. But I do like that there's a way for you to do multiplayer stuff without it 100% impacting your game, right? Like, in Mass Effect 3, it was like, you had to go play multiplayer, and you had to play multiplayer in a whole bunch of different bases, because if you didn't, then, you know, like, your galaxy resources weren't spread out properly. Like, you had to get 100% in each different section of the galaxy, and before you could actually move your main story ahead. And that was a bit of a pain in the ass. Whereas this seems much more just like, get some resources, and, you know, like, you can do that either by going into multiplayer or sending in your squad, one way or the other. But yeah, I just wish there was a bronze option for multiplayer so that I could be like, and what happens, like, can I choose a multiplayer mission from my mission table, go into multiplayer, and then pull you in? And then do, like, we both get credit for that? Or do we have to go in with three random people?
So, I don't know for sure, but I believe that the Apex missions, and the way that Twitter, the way that the Mass Effect Twitter account has been talking about missions, I think they announce a special mission for each weekend. And right now, which might be kind of a spoiler, but it's there's like a GIF of a new enemy that they've added, and it's a new type of enemy from within a certain race. And
I don't necessarily think that anything, because I mean, we did multiplayer before I'd really explored at all. I think the only thing that I'd come across are the guys that kind of look like Turians but are covered with, like, bones.
Yeah, the what are they called?
Ket?
Yes, Ket? Thank you.
Something.
So there's a new Ket enemy type. Ket. Okay. Yeah, that is in multiplayer this weekend. And I believe the way it works is, when I was hosting the matches last week, I could look at my missions. And what that does is, there are four missions on it at a given time, and you can complete them as many times as you want. But they basically, once you've done them once, the rewards don't exist afterwards. But you can queue your party up for the mission, and it basically changes the different match sets. So, like, there might be weather, or it might be a specific map, a specific enemy. But yeah, everybody, I think everybody has the same mission available to them.
Okay.
So you can
party. We should be able to go into a party with four of us and choose a specific mission that will then give us all the completion when we go back into our single player game. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I think they really stepped up their game when it comes to integrating multiplayer in this expansion. In this standalone has nothing to do with the original trilogy title.
Yeah, it's...
But I think they did a good job.
It's a really good multiplayer mode, and it's not really surprising because the bulk of the team working on this game was the team that did the multiplayer for Mass Effect 3. It's got the same setup with the buying of the boxes and unlocking things, and you know, you have consumables and you have different weapons that you can unlock and stuff. It's all there. There's different characters, so at the start you unlock a male and female version of every base class as a human, and then you basically unlock all the aliens and further human classes, and you go on from there. So you have a choice of all your Mass Effect classes. From Vanguard to Adept to Biotic and whatever. And then you start getting into more of the Andromeda type stuff with, you know, constructs and technics. And I'm playing as a very Biotic heavy character. And it's really cool and it feels really good. I still think the auto cover system is a little wonky. Takes some getting used to, especially when you're so used to...
It definitely does.
Yeah, to hitting A and getting into cover and that snap to feeling very secure. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've only been playing on bronze, so it's kind of a good learning curve to get used to that auto cover. But, yeah, I'm really liking multiplayer, and I've actually gone and done a few matches on my own, and that's been a lot of fun.
What?
People are good. Yeah. People know what they're doing in that game.
Yeah, and I think that people in general, and I think we probably talked about this back when we were playing a lot of Mass Effect 3 multiplayer, people seem to be a little bit more forgiving in co-op than PvP. And so that's one of the reasons that I enjoy playing Mass Effect multiplayer more than other things, is because it's you versus the computer as opposed to you versus other people. And it's, I think, a lot less toxic, or at least it had been when we played it in the past. So I'm looking forward to doing more Mass Effect multiplayer, but I think that's enough Mass Effect conversation for this week before we get a little bit more into the game in weeks to come. But speaking of things we kind of dipped our toes into, Ryan, you got to play some Splatoon 2 this weekend, because I unfortunately didn't. They had a really, really wonky schedule for when it was actually available. It was like all over the place, available like off and on for an hour at a time. It was really weird. And I was watching the Hearthstone championship tour. They had the winter championships this last weekend, so that's what I was watching. And I was like, well, if I can't really plan like when I'm gonna be playing Splatoon, I'm just gonna watch Hearthstone and, you know, like, and leave it up to Ryan. So you actually did make it into one of these little 1 hour chunks, right?
I did, yeah. They did this too with Splatoon proper on the Wii U, and I don't necessarily blame Nintendo, because they're not known for their multiplayer experiences, and encouraging everyone to pop in on a specific hour, you know, ensures that there's going to be bulk people playing, as opposed to if you spread it out through a weekend, they're still only going to be looking at peak times. So I can kind of see forcing everyone to a specific time and kind of playing it that way. But yeah, it was a little weird. It was like 3 o'clock, 11 o'clock, and like 8 a.m.
Yeah.
Across the weekend.
Which realistically, the 3 p.m. time I missed just because I didn't know about it. Mm-hmm. The 11 p.m. time I was busy with other stuff. And I never see 8 a.m. unless it's from like the through the night way. So.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I can tell you.
There was no way I was setting an alarm for Sunday at 8 a.m. Nope. Not happening.
Yeah. I played during one of the 3 p.m. slots. And I meant to play at 11 p.m. But Mass Effect was like, I didn't even remember. By the time I was like, oh my gosh, it's 1 o'clock. I'm so tired. I'm going to bed. And then in the morning, I'm like, shit, I forgot to play Splatoon. and it's basically the demo we played in Toronto. It feels like there's a little more polish in there. There was more maps.
Well, yeah, because the demo that we played was literally like, you get one map, go.
Yeah, we only literally played one map. And I don't know. It was still auto. We played two matches, but I think they were on the same map. So, anyways, with the global test fire, you chose from the same four classes we got to choose from in Toronto, which were the splatter roller, the sniper gun, and then the normal shooter, but then the added dual pistols that they put in Splatoon 2. And I played with each one. I'm terrible with the sniper, as always, because I'm a terrible sniper. But I really dig those dualies and being able to dodge, and the animation of dodging is just really cool. But yeah, it was good. It was a small taste. I turned off motion control. You can do that right away.
Yep.
Because I played without turning it off and felt very... It felt like the game was sort of keeping me away from aiming properly. It didn't feel like I could actually shoot properly. So I was trying to move my controller, and it wasn't feeling right. Because yeah. They literally lock you out of that axis. They map it to the motion control.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah. And it'd almost be like I wish they would have unlocked both axes so you could use them with the controller, but then also have the motion control, like have varying degrees. Like I'm saying, three options instead of the two of on or off, put in like a maybe option in there, but I turned it off.
Kind of what they did with Zelda, right? You could do like your big movements with your left and right sticks, and then you could kind of use a motion control to fine adjust. My problem is that I game like I talk. My hands are going all the time. Like I am there. I can't motion control because I'm just constantly like, yeah,
exactly. You're steering a boat when you're playing games.
I am. Like I got my controller and I'm like pushing my buttons real hard. I'm like back and forth. And I can't. So when you throw motion control into that, my whole game just goes out the window. So I go with the off by default option and have a much better gaming experience for it. But I agree, it would be cool to have, or for other gamers who are not me, it would be very cool to have a kind of gross motion control with like your big thumbsticks, and then you've got your like finer controls with the motion. In terms of, sorry, not motion controls, but aiming controls. You know, your big gross movements with your thumbsticks, and then your finer movements with your motion control. Could be cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, not for me. Get motion control. Shoot. Get out.
And turning it off, it felt very good. It felt like I was playing an actual third-person shooter, and it was a lot of fun. And yeah, I enjoyed myself. I played for the hour, and I'm like, okay, this was a solid hour. I've enjoyed it, and I will play the full game when it launches later this summer. I've heard that they're going to be unveiling single player at some point in the near future, so that'll be fun because I really enjoyed that mode in Splatoon. So yeah, it was a good time, and I think that they'll probably do another one of these. This felt very early, and probably due to the fact that there's just not enough games out on the Switch right now. So I think they'll actually do another one of these before launch or around launch. So if you miss this one, certainly look forward to probably another one in the coming months.
I know when we did try it in Toronto, it was really fun. It's got this kind of, it's Nintendo's spin on a shooter, right? Like, so it's kind of goofy fun where everyone just gets covered in paint, and it's kind of like silly, but yeah, it's fun. I enjoyed it because I didn't play the original Splatoon, so this is all new to me, but I had a good time, at least when we saw it in Toronto. So I will probably be picking it up because I like playing multiplayer stuff with you. So yeah. whatever you happen to be doing, I guess I'll get it.
Well, the other thing too is that there's no voice chat in on the Switch yet, so they're probably waiting for
that.
It's like
the one time I was like, yeah, the Switch doesn't have this feature, and I've been like, oh phew, good. Everything else I'm like, damn it, Nintendo. But this I'm like, yeah, I can live without it.
Yeah, well, and that's the other thing too, is like, we'll find a solution for it. Like, we turn off, like, people complain that, oh, that's not built into the system. It's like, we use Discord for every PC game we play, and there is an option built into the game, so I don't see how this is different. The only difference is, I guess, we have to use a different device, but yeah. So anyways, I enjoyed it, and I want to play more of it, but I want to play the actual game, not more of this
not more demo
stuff.
Yeah. Fair enough. I just wanted to take a quick second here to thank our patrons. You can go to patreon.com/thegamersin if you'd like to support the show. We're really close to some really cool goals, including, we've already hit our goal to bring Game Night back, so we're doing Game Night once a month. Like we mentioned, we did our March Game Night was last week. We played some Mass Effect on the PC, and it was a lot of fun. So thank you guys for joining us, and if you would like to support the show, again, that's patreon.com/thegamersin. You can unlock more super awesome podcasting content. I think our next goal is $100 an episode. I think, which is our deep dive inside the game episodes, where we deep dive on story content of single player games. So I highly recommend anyone who, if you enjoy the sound of our voice and our analysis, head on over to patreon.com/gamersin to unlock more podcasting content. Mm-hmm. We also have a patron ad this week from Simon. Ryan, do you want to take it away?
Of course. Simon writes in and says, Gweekly News Desk is a podcast all about the geek news this week. Join your Knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. Find them on iTunes or at gweeklynews.com.
And if you'd like to visit us, you can do so on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on Amoob TV, along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, The Angry Chicken, and For Azeroth. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Ryan is at RMurphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on youtube.com/AMOVETV, except for a couple of episodes from a couple of weeks ago that kind of got messed up on Twitch. I apologize, but all the most recent episodes up to last week are there. You can also email the show at info@gamersandpodcast.com if you'd like to let us know how you are finding either the single or multiplayer versions of Mass Effect Andromeda. We would love to hear from you. So until then, we'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.